Friday the 26th of September, Kof Vov Elul, Yom Vov Tzlichus, Rabbi Malcolm Herman, The Courage of Change.
So at this time of the year, just a few days before Rosh Hashanah, we're all acutely aware of the need for change, but I wanted to spend a little bit of time thinking about the process of change. Basing myself on two different Mamorim, if we get time for both, extracts from two. One is from Rav Huttner, Zatzal, and the other one is from Rav Dessner. Rav Huttner, in Maimon Zayin on Rosh Hashanah, in the seventh Maimon on Rosh Hashanah, says as follows. We say, Ashrei ha'am yodei teruah, Hashem ba'ol panach yehalechon. A sentence that is said after Tkiya Shofar, Ashrei ha'am, happy the people, yodei teruah, that know the teruah, Hashem, ba'ol panach yehalechon. They walk in the illumination of your countenance. They will walk in the illumination of your countenance. That's the sentence that we say after Tkiya Shofar. So on this sentence he asks several questions. First of all, the obvious question is, why does it say happy the people that know the Truah, that know the sound of the Truah? It should say happy the people that listen to the sound of the Truah. The action that we do in reference to the Truah is listen, not know.
Understand.
Yodei Truah. What are we supposed to understand? What's the aspect of understanding in terms of this? To know, to understand, as opposed to listening to it. And secondly, why is this particular mitzvah linked to Hashem Ba'or Panach Yehalechon, that we receive the illumination of divine countenance? We say at the end of the Amidah that all the mitzvahs appear to have this. Why? What's the particularity of this mitzvah in association with this magnificent promise that we will walk in the light and the countenance of Hashem? Furthermore, on this, the Medrash says a rather unusual comment. It says, happy are the people, sheyodim lefatos es boron b'truah. Happy are the people that know, lefatos is to seduce or to entice. How happy do people know how to seduce their creator with the Truah? Very strange expression. To entice or seduce their creator with the Truah. That's his third question. What is this element of seduction, kaviyachol, or enticement in reference to the Truah? So to begin to open up the issue, he takes us to Nehemiah. Nehemiah, the time of the return of the Golus Babel, to Klal Yisrael, were in exile for 70 years, they came back. Not everybody came back. That was the first voluntary diaspora of Jewish history, but not everybody came back. But a large number of Klal Yisrael, a portion of Klal Yisrael came back. And they came to their first Rosh Hashanah. And Nehemiah instructs them for Rosh Hashanah, and he says to them, Lechu, Ichlu Mashmanim, Mishasum Amtakim, Veshilchu Monis Na'in Nachonai. He says, go, don't fast, don't cry, don't mourn on this day. Go and eat good things and drink sweet things and send presents to each other. But he has to instruct them what not to do as well. Don't cry and don't mourn. As though somehow or other, there's some suggestion that that might have been an appropriate mode of behavior. If he had to tell them that isn't the way to behave, clearly they had some thoughts that maybe the correct approach to Rosh Hashanah was in this more somber way, maybe fasting or crying or something. And he says, no. That isn't the approach we take to Rosh Hashanah. That isn't the correct way to approach things. You have to go and celebrate and enjoy and send foods to each other and enjoy the physicality and materiality as well. And it's strange. It's a Yom Tov after all. What was the suggestion? Furthermore, as is reflected in Shulchan Aruch itself, there is a discussion about whether it might be appropriate to fast in Rosh Hashanah. Although we don't say that, but certainly in terms of fasting to Chatzos, there's some discussion about. Also, normally if a person was to have a negative dream, a scary dream, so certainly in days gone by, a person would fast for their dream. Tanis Chalem. What happens if you fast on a Shabbat or a Yom Tov? So you've done something wrong. So if you fast on a Shabbat or a Yom Tov, you have to fast another day instead. Because it's inappropriate to fast on Shabbat or Yom Tov. Not if you fast on Rosh Hashanah for an inappropriate dream. It's not something you should do, but if one does that, for there, you do not have to fast another day instead. So again, the association of something much more somber in terms of our approach to Rosh Hashanah. That there's a discussion, is it appropriate to fast? Maybe that's the correct way to go about it. Maybe that's the correct mode of behavior, etc. So that is another point. What is this concept that maybe the approach to Rosh Hashanah, which needs to be debated and discussed and eventually dismissed, if you like, is that perhaps the appropriate way is not l'chu ichlu mashmanim v'shusum amtakim, but the appropriate way is a much more demanding way, if you like. These are the issues that he raises. So to begin to unravel some of these, let's have a look at the way that the Rambam expresses the concept of Bechira, free choice. The Rambam in Hilchos Teshuva says as follows, Dabar Zer Ikar Gadol, the concept of Bechira is Perek Hei Halacha Beis, is a primary concept in Yiddish guide. V'hu Omos HaTorah V'Mitzvah, it's a foundation, fundament. Shnema, and he brings the pasuk. Ei, nosati lefanecha hayom eschaim esatos. That's a moment. How do we know it's so critical? Because it says, "See, I put before you choice, and the choice is expressed as life and good, or death and negativity." Free choice, says Rambam, Tira, is parallel with life itself. It's expressive of life itself. Life and choice go hand in hand. Life is choice and choice is life. In other words, it's the very essence of what it means to function as a human being is to have the possibility of choices. If we lose the possibility of choices, then we lose the very essence of what it means to function as a spiritually successful human being. Life and choice go hand in hand. And the Rambam goes on to say that each person has the free choice to do what to do as they please. The Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't impose them in any respect whatsoever. But life is choice. Hachayim, that is choice. It's that which gives life meaning. It's interesting to note, says Rav Hutner, that whenever we talk about free choice, we say we have various expressions that that state that everything is in our hands apart from Hakol B'Yad Shamayim Chutz Mi'Yirat Shamayim. What does that mean? There are certain aspects of our lives that are either predetermined or we have no ability to control, but one thing we always have the ability to control, and that is free choice. We are not automatons, we are free-willed human beings. How is that expressed? Hakol B'Yad Shamayim Chutz Yira Shemayim. Everything is in the hands of heaven apart from Yira Shemayim, the fear of heaven. Now in fact, really what we're saying here is that we have free choice. We have free choice. But why is it expressed as Yira Shemayim, fear of heaven, when it could have also been expressed as Ahavas Hashem, love of Hashem? Those are two sides of the same coin. We have fear of Hashem, we have love of Hashem. We have love of Hashem, we have fear of Hashem. If we want to give expression to the concept that we have free choice, it could have said Hakol B'Yad Shemayim Chutz Me'Ahavas Hashem. Everything is in the hands of heaven apart from the love of Hashem. If anything, it might have been a more positive way to express it. When it comes to the love of Hashem, we have free will. But Chazal choose to express the freedom of choice by reference to Yira Shamayim, the fear of heaven, as opposed to Avas Hashem, the love of Hashem. So, he raises a very intriguing question. Let's imagine that a person was given the following choice. Would you like to be in a position where there was no such thing as fate? Fate was eradicated. There was no sin in the world, no prospect of spiritual failure. Now, one's initial reaction, different reactions around the room, but one's initial reaction might be, well, hang on a second, fate is dangerous, fate is poison, fate is insidious, fate is threatening. Well, yes, I mean, because then I will have, I won't be sullied or damaged or contaminated. But the more sophisticated reaction, and the more considered reaction is, hang on a second, if there isn't fate, there isn't opportunity. If there isn't sin, prospect of failure, there's no possibility of success. I can't, without challenge, I cannot succeed. So we have a kind of dual reaction to this. On the one hand, it might be a reaction of Ahavas Hashem. Well, yes, that would be fantastic, because that would eradicate possibility of failure. On the other hand, there's a sense of understanding that we need that hate, we need the existence of hate, for life to have any meaning whatsoever. So react to that question with an ambivalence. React to that question with a kind of dichotomy. On the one hand, yes, on the other hand, no. On the one hand, yes, on the other hand, no. It's that very sense of ambivalence that is the essence of what choice is all about. If we don't appreciate the threat of failure, we don't appreciate the opportunity of success. They go hand in hand. One and the other go hand in hand. He gives a very interesting and lovely example of this. I've heard this story many times. I don't know who it's attributed to, and he doesn't bring who it's attributed to. Maybe it's anecdotal, but the concept is very interesting. So there was once a Rav who was trying to encourage one of his Talmidim to become a Mora Halacha, to Paskan Halachas. And the Talmud was very resistant. To become a Mora Halacha, to Paskan Halachas. He felt his Talmud had the Halachic capacity to do so. And the Talmud was very resistant. And he said to the Talmud, why are you so resistant? So he said, because I'm scared of making a mistake. Paskaning Halacha. I'm scared of making a mistake. The Rav said to him, what do you want me to do? Choose somebody who's not scared of making a mistake? Is that what you want me to do? Of course you should be scared of making a mistake. Well, I didn't think he was scared of making a mistake. I wouldn't ask you to do what I'm asking you to do. It's only because I know that you have the fear that it means that I know that you understand the responsibility, the awesomeness, the possibility of passing halacha. Without that, so it's the fear that fuels the possibility. Without the fear, that would demonstrate a failure to appreciate. I often think to myself, would I prefer to go to a doctor that's scared of making a mistake, or a doctor that's confident I'll never make a mistake? I know which one I'd prefer to go to if I had to go. Of course, because there's life at stake, everything at stake. I prefer to go to somebody who understands what it is. It's only when they have that sense of fear and pachad that you know they have that understanding of what the real opportunity is. And it's that curiosity, that the fear and the opportunity go hand in hand. One fuels the other. And he says that's why we express, and in fact, in essence, it's the fear that fuels the possibility. And that has to come first. When we talk about free choice, when we express the idea that we have free choice, it's hakol bidei shamayim chutz miyirah shamayim. That's the point. We link it to yirah shamayim, to fear of shamayim, rather than avat Hashem, because that is the prerequisite for our appreciation of the possibility of choosing successfully. When we understand what is at stake, before we understand what is at stake, then we cannot move forward. So, and this is the concept that he brings, that the essence of the chira, the essence of choice, the choice of change, is that constant tension between the fear versus the opportunity. And when is the anniversary of free choice? The birthday of free choice is Rosh Hashanah. Hayom HaRatzonim. Comes from the creation of the Marishan. So the very first moments, the very first hours of human history included choice to eat from the Eitz HaDaat and not to eat from the Eitz HaDaat. They included choice. So Rosh Hashanah is the anniversary of free choice. You would expect, therefore, that on Rosh Hashanah itself, this concept is accentuated. This concept is highlighted. Ultimately, it's us deciding how to use life ahead. And it is reflected in the very sounds of the shofar. The truer is the broken sound. The truer is, it's a brachana sound. It's a sound of crying. The truer is the sound that expresses the fear of free choice, that we understand on the day of Rosh Hashanah, that when we're evaluating what life is all about, that there's an awesomeness to the choices that we face. There's a responsibility to the choices that we face. So whilst we are expressing the truer, we are expressing, in sound, we are verbalizing, if you like, we're all vocalizing the fear of free choice. On the other hand, we know it's that fear that fuels the possibility and the celebration of free choice, the celebration of what Bechira offers to us. So with this in mind, let's tie it all together. The first question we ask is, Ashrei Ha'am Yodei Torah, understand. Happy are the people that understand the Torah. If they understand the Torah, then they understand the Yiras Shamayim. They are absolutely in tune with what life is all about. If they hear the Truah and it resonates, that it expresses them, it's a metaphor for the fear of free choice, they literally understand the very essence of what life is all about. But although they are expressing it with fear, they're celebrating the opportunity that gives for success. Though they're expressing it with fear, they're celebrating the opportunity that gives for success. That's what it means. They know lefatos is borok. What is a pitok? What is a seduction? It's where you say one thing but you mean something else. You say one thing but you mean something else. Where your heart and lave are not, your mouth and heart are not in tandem. You're expressing yourself in one but you don't mean that. That's what it's saying. That there has to be a point. We are expressing to our conscious brother the fear, but we have to understand that at the same time that fear within our hearts, we feel that fear gives us the opportunity. So we're saying one thing, we're vocalizing one thing with the shofar, but we're feeling something else. We're feeling that very fear gives us that possibility of success, of opportunity, of understanding what life is all about. Hence, and Chazal, in this one word, express that this is what it means. That dichotomy of fear and opportunity go hand in hand, and are captured in the sounds of the shofar. We're vocalizing fear, but we understand it's that fear that gives us opportunity. We don't want a world without hate. A world without hate is a world denuded of possibility. And that's why there is a suggestion. Maybe it's appropriate to fast on Rosh Hashanah. Because which aspect are we focusing on? Which aspect should we understand that Rosh Hashanah is the anniversary of free choice. Which aspect of free choice should we focus on? And the psak is, and the halacha is, yeah, of course you have to understand that. Of course you have to understand that. That's what it's all about. But that very understanding gives us the appreciation of what life is all about. And that appreciation is critical for us to move forward. Thus far, Rav Huttner's expression, and that's why it's free choice is overarching. Free choice is it's the global concept of Yiddishkeit. Hence, if we appreciate this, that's our oras ponim, that's the Kodesh Baruch Hu's radiance, that is life itself. We're enveloped by an appreciation of spiritual life itself in a much more overarching way than any other particular mitzvah. Therefore, Ashrei Ha'am Yodei Torah, Hashem Ba'ar Panecha Elecha. If they understand this, they internalize this, then they have a real grasp in terms of what life is all about, what the opportunities are in spiritual terms for the year ahead. That's our part one. Part two. So that, if you like, part one is an expression of the analysis of the enigma of free choice. Part two is Rav Dessler. When I first learned this from Bessel some years ago, it really changed the way I think about how I make choices. And he says as follows. We tend to think that we make our choices at the moment of opportunity. So you're confronted with an opportunity, let's say a positive opportunity to give stock up, or a negative opportunity to say Lashon Hara. We tend to think that we make the choice. And afterwards I say to myself, at that moment I decided A or B. That's how we tend to think about it. In fact, it's a much more complex process than this. I'd like to give you two examples. One example is my example, and the other example is a Bessel's example. Let me start, if I may, with my own. Imagine you have a colleague at work with whom there is a difficult relationship. I will say, because this is being recorded, that this is a theoretical example, that a colleague at work with whom there's a difficult relationship, there's always a sense in which you feel that they are not shirking responsibilities, and you feel that they're never really there when you need them to be there, etc., etc. You make a meeting with your colleague at 9 o'clock in the morning, and you're there at 9 o'clock, although you've had some distance to travel from Edgware or somewhere, and they arrive at 10 past 9 or they live around the corner. And then when they rush in, and they're very apologetic, I'm so sorry I was late, the car wouldn't start, there's traffic on the road. Now, meanwhile, you're coughing inside. You're coughing, of course, if you're English, you don't say anything. You say, it's okay, don't worry about it, it's fine. But inside, you're coughing inside. It's okay, it's fine. You're coughing. Now, why I say anything is so typical of them, just typical of them. It's always the same. I got here on time, they couldn't get here on time. Typical. Similar situation the next day. Identical situation, a colleague with whom there's a sense of camaraderie, a sense of shared responsibility, a sense of partnership, and they arrive 10 minutes late. And you say, don't worry, it's fine, I was just checking my emails, I'd like to sit down for this, I'll caught up in the mission or something. Oh, no, it's fine, don't worry about it at all. Came out the same situation, but your reaction is totally different. Now, clearly you didn't make the choice at the moment of interaction, otherwise there should have been a consistency between the two choices. Says Rav Dessler, what happens is that we have a paradigm in our minds. Have a frame of reference in our mind. And what then happens is simply the translation of the frame of reference we have in our minds. So for the first colleague, you've built up resentment, maybe correctly so. You've built a sense of disappointment, maybe correctly so. And your reaction is simply the translation of the frame of reference in your mind. On the other hand, with the second colleague, you have a positive frame of reference. And your ability to react positively is simply a reflection of that frame of reference. In other words, example one, number one. So the choice wasn't made at the moment of action or the moment of opportunity or challenge. The choice was in your mind, and what happened was almost the automatic translation of what was in your mind. Now Rav Dessler's famous example. He gives the example of a person who smokes. Let's imagine somebody who smokes, and every night they go to bed and they have searing pain, and they can't fall asleep, and they're coughing, and it's terrible. And they say to themselves, I've got to stop this, it's ridiculous, I can't fall asleep, I'm agonizing, I've got pains in my chest, they're agonized. What happens the next day? They get to the office and the deliverers haven't delivered, or the suppliers haven't supplied, etc., etc. And what do? Their hand trembles over the cigarette box. Now, do they say to themselves, I don't care about the pain, I'm going to have this cigarette anyway? Of course they don't say that. No sane human being says, I don't care about this terrible pain. What they say to themselves is, I'm going to have one. I'll just have one. One will be okay. Or they say to themselves, I'll go jogging in the evening. Or they say to themselves, I'll have a drink of mineral water before I go to bed. They don't say to themselves, I'm going to... Now, if you were to take them by the lapel and say, listen, my friend, listen, it's cigarette plus pain or no cigarette. That's the choice you're facing. Cigarette plus pain or no cigarette. That's the choice you're facing. Now, if they were to face that real choice, there is a stronger possibility that they may make a different decision. But what happens here is that at that moment, they create different paradigms. At that moment they reframe the options in their mind. The real options on this side are cigarette plus pain or no cigarette, but they don't look at those options. They create illusory options and they say one cigarette or no cigarette. But those aren't real options, those are sheker options. They create illusory options. In other words, the difference between the first example and my first example is like the paradigms were pre-existing, long-term pre-existing. But in the second example, but your choice in the first example was not how do I react now, but how do I look at the person in my mind? Do I look at them as someone that I resent, someone that I feel a sense of resentment to, or do I look at them positively? Your reaction translates from that. In the second example, it's as it more closer to that moment of choice. But still what you're doing is, you're not deciding to smoke, you're deciding which options to face. Says Rav Dessler, Bechira does not mean what do I do now. This here is about, do I face real options or do I face illusory options? In other words, it's not about making the right choice, it's about facing the right choices. Life is about facing the right choices. And therefore, as I said, when I first learned this, it's a much more subtle understanding of how process of choice and change works. It's not about making the right choice at that moment. Probably at that moment it's too late. It's about facing the real choices. I'll give another practical example, if I may. Let's imagine you have 7 weeks to prepare a share, whatever it is, or to send in your tax return, or whatever it is. Okay? And as I often say, that procrastination is one of the things that I get on with immediately. Okay? You say to yourself, look, I can either start today or start tomorrow. But you know that life history demonstrates if you don't start today, it's going to be a last minute rush. So what do you say to yourself? You could say, I'll start today, I'll start tomorrow. Is that the real choice? Or is the real choice, it's today or it's going to be a last minute rush? Or whether it's chazara, whatever it is, or whether it's a shir. You say, okay, so I won't go to shir tonight, I'm feeling tired. No, I'll go to shir. I'll always catch up tomorrow. But you know that you never catch up tomorrow. Now, the choice you've given yourself is, I'll go to the shir or I'll catch up tomorrow. But if we were real with ourselves, we'd say, no, it's go to the shir or I'm not going to catch up because I never catch up tomorrow. It just disappears. It's not about making the right choice. It's about facing the real choices. What are the real choices? That's what Bechir is. Another point. That is, as Rav Esther says elsewhere, but he alludes to it here as well, that if we understand this, then we understand a little bit more. It's a pitchfork text, an opening to the chait of Adam and Chava. Adam and Chava. Is it conceivable that Adam and Chava said to themselves, Hashem says don't do this, but we're going to do it anyway? Is that conceivable? They said, we know Hashem doesn't want us to eat from this tree, but we're going to eat from the tree anyway. That's inconceivable. So Rav Esther elsewhere in his analysis, and I say, alludes to it here, says that isn't the choice they make. They knew that Hashem said don't eat from the tree. Why? Mekadesh Shem Shemaim, don't eat from the tree. But they had a whole cheshbon, a whole calculation, that they could be Mekadesh Shem Shemaim, bring more kedusha into the world, if they did eat from the tree. How so is a longer story. But the point about it is, they didn't say, we're going to eat from the tree, although we know Hashem says no. They said, they reframed the choices. Do I eat from the tree, Mekadesh Shem Shemaim? Well, no. Maybe, with our own calculation, we can bring more kedusha Shem Shemaim into the world by not eating from the tree. So their bechira wasn't, do they eat from the tree or not? Their bechira was, which do they face the real options or do they face the illusory options? And that is Shekhar versus Emes. It's interesting, but it has occurred to me, I haven't really seen this anywhere, but it's a little bit, if I may say so, based on Rav Hirsch. If you think about the Shnei HaSeirim, Sa'al HaZazel, Sa'al HaShem. So apart from all the allusions according to Kabbalah, which I don't understand, but many of the Farshim talk about it in terms of the symbolism. So on Yom Kippur, in the Beis Hamikdash, so the Kohen Gadol stood there with the Shnei HaSeirim, one on the right side, one on the left side. And he put his hands into the Kalpi, where there were two plaques, placed the plaque on the right side, left side. One of them is sent out into the wilderness and it dies at Azazel. One of them is taken into the Beis Hamikdash. What did this mean? So, as I say, perhaps, if I may say, a little bit based on the thought process of Rav Hirsch, this seems to be a metaphor for the process of choice. If you were to be standing there on Yom Kippur, and I was to ask you, which of these would you prefer to be? So your instinctive reaction, if you don't know what's happening next, is, well, that one's going out to freedom. That one, the kind of Shechita life is waiting for it. But if you've understood the process of choice, then the reaction should be, hang on a second, let's transcend that, and let's see what happens next. Let's see what happens next. What is further down the line? Don't decide automatically by what you see now, but just escape what you see now and see what happens next. It becomes a living symbolism for the process of choice. It's interesting, again, I haven't seen this anywhere, but I wonder if, you know, every Hebrew word can be spelled as anagrams of other words, whether the word Bachar has actually five different anagrams. We're not analyzing all five, but a couple of them are very particular. So the word Bachar is also an anagram of the word Barach. Barach means to escape. To escape. Because before one can make real choices, one has to escape the mindset that one is already in. If you can't escape the trappings of that mindset, then one is forever trapped in the pre-existing reference points. It also has the word rachav, which is expansion, a sense of context. So, let me just draw things together with quite a powerful story that I heard quite recently, which I think captures it all. So let me summarize what we've come to. We started off with Rav Huna. Rav Huna talked about, if you like, what is free choice. Ashrei Adam Yodei Terah, that what does it mean to understand the Terah? Ultimately, free choice is on the one hand a threat, on the other hand an opportunity. We have Yira Shemayim because we recognize that the danger of failure, but it's that danger of failure that fuels the possibility of success. And that is a prerequisite for understanding what life is all about, the very essence of what life is all about. And that's what it says, Yodei Teruah. The Teruah in its expression is an expression of that. But it's not what we really mean. It's what we say, but what we really understand from that at a deeper level is that possibility of failure fuels the possibility of success. And that is why there is a suggestion, should we fast, should we not fast, which aspect of free choice do we celebrate? Ultimately we celebrate the great possibilities that free choice give us. And then Rav Bester, in terms of the process of choice, it's not about making the right choice, it's about facing the right choices. If we can face the right choices, we have a much greater possibility of making the right choice. But if we just go through life without thinking of the options that we're facing on a day-to-day situation, then our chances of making the right choices are much more limited. So recently we had in our offices in Edgware a dedication of one of our rooms by Rabbi Aviezer Wolfson, probably well known to many here. Rabbi Aviezer Wolfson, who is a well-known philanthropist and a lecturer and a wonderful lecturer. So our rooms in Edgware are now called the Sam and Fanny Wolfson Room. And he came to give an opening lecture and he told an amazing story about his father, and asked him in the room his name. His father, if I remember the details correctly, his parents lived, I can't remember the sequence now, but part of the time up north in Scotland, part of the time on the south coast. As a preliminary story to say what his father was like, he told us that when he lived in the south coast, I think it was in Brighton or somewhere, or Hove, Brighton and Hove, so in the 1930s, when there were aspects of fascism in this country as well. On one occasion he said that his father heard that there was to be a speaker in a local town hall who was going to speak about the alien menace in the United Kingdom. What was the alien menace? The heathen, the Jews. So his father apparently was a real tackist, a real personality, and he went along to this occasion and he took with him his orange box in case there should be a need to heckle during the occasion. And he goes there and there's a hall there full of people, and this guy started talking about it and goes on. Eventually it's the Jews. But he has a wonderful solution, a practical solution, that no property owner should rent or let property to any Jew. And that way eventually they'll be squeezed out of the country. That was the suggestion. At that point in time, Mr. Wilson got his orange box, planted it on the floor, stood up and said, and called out, "Now I know why Yoshki was born in a barn." Because nobody was born in a barn, because nobody would rent him a decent property. And then he exited the hall. Rabbi Wolfson said he still has the cuttings from the local newspaper. Apparently after a whole tumult broke out, no one knew who had shouted out, there was a whole commotion, he was standing there, it was a fist fight, and he still got the cuttings from it. That was the first story he told, just to say who his father was. But this is a story which I think just captures everything that I've tried to share. So that Rabbi Wolfson himself was once on the train in Scotland, and there was a guy on the train who was quite, I don't know if he was a bit shicker, but he was kind of a Scottish gentleman, and he was going around the carriage asking everybody who they were, and who are you, and who are you, and who are you, and who are you? And his father was kind of trying to keep himself out of the way, but he couldn't avoid this one. Eventually the guy says to him, "Who are you?" So he says, "My name is Wolfson." So the guy's startled. He says, "Is Sam Wolfson a relation of yours?" He says, "Yeah, that's my father." He couldn't believe this spelling, knew his father. So he said to him, "I was in the trenches with your father in World War I. And he said, "And never a day went past without your father putting on his boxes." Yeah. It's for lecturers, just to put it. Never a day went past. On one occasion, we were literally in the trench, and your father was in a trench putting on his tefillin, his phylacteries, and he insisted on standing up to pray. And there were bullets flying all over the place, and myself and another colleague from the other side tried to put him down, and he wouldn't. And he quoted us some pasuk about some sentence about how tefillin protect you, and he wouldn't. He said, "You know something? We were the only three from our unit that survived that day. We were the only three. Everybody else in the trenches on that day is finished." He said, "And I know why we survived, because of your father. Your father, that's why we survived." So I was awesome. First of all, he never heard the story before. He hadn't got on a train to meet this. So he goes to him, he says, "His father, first of all, is the story true?" His father says, "Yes, it is," which I think says enormous amount about his father. He never told his father about the story. Interesting. So he said to his dad, "I don't understand why you did that. It's against halacha. You stood up to say to me at risk of your life. Why did you do that?" So his father said to him, "Because I was convinced that this was the last day of my life. I was convinced." He said, "And I felt on the last day of my life, I want to stand up to say to Amira. I want to stand up. On the last day of my life, I want to go out of this world standing up before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not sitting down before HaKadosh Baruch Hu." Incredible perspective. Incredible perspective. So, and I thought to myself, how does a person make a choice like that? How do you make a choice like that? The charity is that wasn't his mysterious nefesh. His Mesiras Nefesh was choice after choice after choice. He made decade after decade after decade. Until within his mind, the paradigm was such that that opportunity from the Kadoshim Shemayim, the opportunity for Mesiras Nefesh was automatic. That wasn't the Mesiras Nefesh, that was a result of Mesiras Nefesh after Mesiras Nefesh after Mesiras Nefesh, after self-sacrifice after self-sacrifice, after building up within himself a frame of reference that meant that at that moment in time, that cataclysmic moment, that critical moment, what he had to do, what he thought was necessary, was automatic. I think it's an amazing story. So, I'm only sharing thoughts that are going through my mind before Rosh Hashanah, that over Rosh Hashanah, it's about having the courage to make the right choices. And in Mitzvah Hashem, if we have the courage to face the right choices and to make the right choices, in Mitzvah Hashem, Kadosh Baruch Hu will respond with choices for us that will be for the good of ourselves and for Kali Yisrael.